Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
If you coach for 8 hours a week, try and invest 25% of that time in self-learning.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
You're now listening to The Coaches Network, a podcast aiming to bring people at the heart of coach and player development together. My name is Coach Yas, a UEFA A licensed, FA Advanced Youth Award, and FA Goalkeeper B licensed coach. With over 10 years of experience working in youth football from grassroots right through to Premier League academies, I'm currently operating as an affiliate tutor for the FA alongside working towards a Masters in Performance Football Coaching. Today I'm going to be joined by my co-host and the Coaches Network Analysis Specialist, Coach Ben. Ben is a UEFA A licensed coach who holds an FA Youth Award and a Masters in Sports Coaching, with 10 years of experience including working across the male and female youth development pathways, alongside a vast experience on individual, player and team performance analysis. And as part of our Insight series, we'll be joined by a range of individuals working across multiple disciplines within the coaching world in order to explore their journeys and dig deeper into their experiences, so that we can leave you with some golden nuggets to help you reach your full potential.
Right, as welcome back to the Coaches Network. This is Coach Yas. I've got a very special guest with me. I've got Dean Harding. Dean Harding is currently Director of Coaching at Wizards FC over in the States. Good afternoon or good morning, whichever it is for you, Dean.
Yeah, good morning from States, Chicago. Yeah, great. Thank you so much for having me this morning or afternoon, England time.
Brilliant. Just, you know, Dean, you know, just to kind of give the listeners and myself a bit of a backdrop of your journey and where you've come from, you know, for those that don't know already, would you mind just going into a bit of detail about where you started your coaching journey?
Yeah, so I started coaching around about 2000. Part of my old kind of YTS scheme at Southend United was to do the kind of the level one coaching badge. And kind of after completing that, I think, you know, like most people, when they start their journey, they kind of take a couple of Sunday league teams. And I just felt like, you know, from the back end of me playing as a kid when I was 8 all the way through, that, you know, that coaching was kind of the next step. I wasn't quite good enough to make professional. And that's kind of where my coaching journey started from there, really, back in 2000.
So, you know, going from 2000, of course, to 2020, you're now currently working in Chicago, yep, Director of Coaching for Wizards. How did that journey progress? You've gone and got your level one almost 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, now you've worked in a host of different clubs within the EEEE, and obviously now taking your,
yeah,
you know, your play abroad now. Where have you ended up along the way?
Yeah, so, you know, as I said, back in 2000, I took a young team, Sunday League, and just started applying the trade to the coaching, really. It wasn't till about 2011 that I managed to get a part-time role at Dagenham Redbridge. I think at the time, they were League Two, and Wayne Bennett just took over. So I managed to kind of get into the kind of professional ranks from there. And then I took kind of like the under-12s upwards, them kind of age groups. And, you know, that's where the kind of professional coaching journey started for me. So it took me almost 11 years from starting my journey in 2000 all the way up to 2011 to even get, you know, into a professional club. So from there, obviously, after taking Redbridge, I managed to get a part-time role at West Ham United in about 2012. And then I was approached by Arsenal about 2 years later. And I left West Ham to join Arsenal, where I had 3 or 4 fabulous years at Arsenal. And it was there, really, that in the kind of summer breaks, I was working for a company that would invite American teams over to kind of go around England and play different professional setups, that I come across this team from Chicago. And I took them for a training session. And part of their kind of journey was they got coached by professional coaches in professional clubs. And me and the kind of owner of this current club that I'm at now kind of hit off straight away. And, you know, he kept saying to me, you know, do you fancy coaching in America? And I, at the time, was doing really well at Arsenal. I never would have considered it. But then as I kind of thought more about it, I thought about, you know, kind of extending myself and going, you know, doing something so totally out of the blue, that I decided to move across to Chicago. And here I am now, kind of 3 years later.
And obviously along that way, you work with a range of different groups of players and work in various different environments. What would you say is some of the biggest things you've taken from working in the elite game?
Yeah, I mean, you're within the ranks of working with a professional club, you're working with the best kids in the area. You know, certainly when you got to the likes of West Ham and Arsenal, you know, you're working with the kind of the best kids, and that is always great, because these kids already have great knowledge. They've got great technical skill. You know, they understand the game to a certain high level. So it's holding yourself accountable to your high standards, that you're going to keep testing these kids to the best they can be. So that was always, I wouldn't say a challenge, but as always, that was always very kind of inviting, and also it kept on your toes to make sure that you was the best person you could be. But alongside that, working alongside, you know, some fabulous coaches, I've been very lucky to work alongside of like Jan van Loon, Adam Birchill, who was fantastic, Greg Lincoln, you know, and I was very fortunate to work alongside the legend Thierry Henry, who come back to Arsenal I think he was completing his pro license. So to work alongside them kind of coaches who have been in and around that kind of game and were great professionals themselves was also a great learning curve. So there's a massive amount that I took away for myself in terms of learning.
Definitely. So just in your current role then, obviously director of coaching over at Leicester FC, what does that look like on a day-to-day? And, you know, what would you say around how much of a part of that plays, not just in player development, but as well as coach development? And would you mind just expanding on that?
Yeah, so I've been here for just under 3 years now. There's 8 coaches here. We've got around about 350 kids in the club, ranging from under-7s all the way up to under-19s. It's probably taking me 2.5 years to kind of get the club to where I want it now. So when I originally got here, there were some coaches here that, you know, didn't believe in coaches development. There wasn't a philosophy of play. There wasn't a methodology of how we wanted to do things and how the sessions should look. So it's taken me a lot of time up to this point now, really, where I had to kind of change a few things. Obviously, I didn't want to come in with a sledgehammer and just destroy everything, you know, because there was some really good stuff happening. But I certainly sensed that the club needed a kind of sense of direction. So I think the first 2 years was me kind of coming in and really assessing things, you know, making a few changes with staff and really suggesting things to the board and the owner about how we can move forward with things. And even simple things like, some of the coaching, the style a kind of way of playing. I had some coaches that wanted to go direct. I had some coaches that wanted to play it from the back. And especially in the environment that I'm in, we had, obviously, we're a very, in terms of Arsenal, West Ham, we're a lot lower level club. But here, you know, some of the kids would be exposed to different coaches and different teams. So there's a lot of players here that would be given the opportunity to play up. And I felt it was very important that, you know, if you are going to go from one team to another team, there had to be a same coaching style or a same methodology of how you want to play. Because a lot of the times a kid will go up a team and they'll be used to playing it from the back, and then that kind of coach wants to go direct. And there's no right or wrong to that. But it just it felt like the kind of club was on different islands, and it kind of took me 2 years to kind of, you know, get ropes around these islands and bring it all together. So that's what the kind of my journey's been up to this point. But yeah, I mean, it's a very, very different, culturally different environment here in terms of the kids. You know, I'm coming here and, you know, soccer, I'll say, sorry, football is not the number one sport. It's probably three or four on the list. You got, you know, sports like American football, basketball, baseball's huge here. So you're constantly fighting for the kids' attention to make sure that they're choosing soccer, football over them sports. So it's a real kind of different environment here. But also the culture in terms of the parents here, they're very results orientated over development. So again, over for the last 2 years, I've been really focusing on educating the parents, and that's been a real challenge for me, because previously, in, you know, at the likes of Dagenham, West Ham, Arsenal, there was parent kind of involvement, but nowhere near to the scale here. So again, that's been something that I've had to really kind of focus on over the past 2.5 years.
Definitely. You know, you talked there about obviously coming in initially and there being almost a way of doing things and not wanting to go in with a sledgehammer, as you put it. You know, it's very important as you're coming into that new environment, you're not going to make too many radical changes, especially over a short space of time anyway. What would you say is some of the biggest challenges you faced within that? You know, what was the biggest resistance that you felt from the existing staff in that?
Well, first of all, they had an impression of me because obviously of my background, and I think that's always something to be mindful of. They kind of have the attitude that I know best, and that's not always the point. That's not always the kind of truth. You know, I still want to learn. I still want to grow as a coach. So if I felt for the first 6 months, it was kind of me breaking down them barriers and kind of getting to know the staff and understanding their personalities, you know, what their strengths were, what their weaknesses were, what they need to improve on. Kind of similar how you would deal with a player or a team if you're going to take over, you know, a squad, really, whatever that may be. You've got to kind of work out what you're dealing with. But I think, first of all, I think what I learned early was it weren't necessarily about them. It was more about me in terms of what environment was I creating. So, you know, simple things like when I got here, no one done session plans. I mean, some of the coaches did, some of the coaches didn't. So straight away, I kind of, rather than come in and say, well, everyone's got to have a session plan, I looked at myself, and as a DOC, I had to set my standards high. In terms of, well, it's, you know, it needs to start with me. This change has to start with myself in terms of me creating the best environment and then letting others follow rather than me pushing. And I felt that was kind of a real breaking point to me, because then you kind of see who is going to follow your kind of remit and your kind of your direction. And then from there, there was great change, because they could see the way that, you know, I wanted to do things, and you could sense that the change was going to happen from that point. But as I say, necessarily, it's not about, you know, me coming in and saying, well, this is how it's got to be. You know, culturally, we've got a few Mexican coaches in our club, and that's great. Now, Mexican soccer football to English, American soccer football is totally different. And, you know, so also I had to be open to embrace that culture and embrace that way of playing, because that's also something that could add to my knowledge and also add to the kids that we're obviously going to recruit. So it's not necessarily just one way. It's having all these different ideas and different philosophies to make the ultimate best way of playing or doing things.
Mm-hmm. Just in terms of, you know, yourself now then, you know, moving into the director of coaching role, is that something that you know, have always had your eyes set on, or is it a case of that's just an opportunity you couldn't turn down?
Yeah, a little bit of both, really. I think it was something that I knew initially I was going to probably struggle at. And if you look at my experience, you know, a lot of my roles have been head of team. So I've been very, you know, team, individual, development based. I've never really overseen a group of coaches. But I just felt like it was the right time to kind of move on, and especially with the kind of USA market where, you know, as I said, soccer is not the number one sport. It was a good platform to give me that kind of opportunity to put myself in an uncomfortable position and kind of learn from it, really. And yeah, I've absolutely loved it, because the role itself has given me an opportunity to teach others, to obviously learn from different people, from different cultures, you know, and also I've been able to coach as well. So I've had a little bit of the both worlds of coaching and developing individuals in terms of coaching. So I think now, sitting here now and kind of looking back, yeah, absolutely. I think it's definitely a direction that I want to take. I had an opportunity at the beginning of the year to be an assistant to a women's professional team in New York, and kind of got to the last kind of stages of agreeing a contract, and then kind of re-looked at it again, and then kind of said, well, you know, I really enjoy myself here. That would obviously mean that my family would have to move again to New York. So I felt like it was, I need to kind of, I haven't come here and completed the project that I originally come here for. And I know this project that I'm doing now is going to take probably 8, 10, maybe 15 years. So I felt like if I was moving on, even though the kind of the professional world, that glamour lights again, was kind of shown in front of me, that really I hadn't quite completed this project yet that I'd come across here for. So and I decided to stay in Chicago. And I think what I will say as well is, you know, being the DOC, some of the simple things matter. And I mean that in a real, you know, kind of broad manner, in terms of we do a lot of coaching education events. So we try and do one a month. We meet on every Monday night after training sessions. We try and do a lot of that's just the coaches. Yeah. So we once a month have like a kind of in-house training day where we invite a couple of teams in, and that's not necessarily me leading the sessions. That's the coaches leading the sessions, and we kind of give feedback, and again, just kind of making sure that everyone has a voice, and, you know, in terms of they're getting relevant feedback to either improve or to enhance his skill. But it made me think last week that I was talking, the topic was defending for the week. And I said at the beginning of the week about setting traps, and how Arsenal, when I was there at Arsenal, we were, you know, we always used to work on setting traps. And it was a simple trap from, you know, the other team playing out from the back from the goal kick. And we kind of allowed the ball to go to the left back, and then we kind of set the trap. And it was such an easy concept. But the coaches were so like, we want to hear more about this. And again, that kind of opened my eyes up where something so simple, which probably would you never think of, actually meant a lot to the coaches. They wanted to hear about that. Not necessarily because it was kind of an Arsenal way, but something so simple, like, you know, about setting traps, you know. So again, it's sometimes simple is more important, rather than, as a DOC, you think that there has to be this really upper knowledge of, like, you've got to provide everything and it has to be kind of Jose Mourinho, Pep Guardiola kind of high level, where something so basic as setting trap really kind of stuck with the coaches more during that kind of hour meeting than anything else you said that was probably a bit more advanced. So again, that's something that again is important to know. Okay. Hello? So you cut out, sorry you cut out.
Yeah, sorry about it. Lost you for 2 seconds, mate. Yes, you know, just kind of build on that then. You know, what would you say your role has taught you about leading?
Hey there,
others?
Hello. Yeah, sorry, cut again, sorry.
Hello? Yeah, no, it's just, yeah, just kind of lead on.
I think it's
I
definitely just, you know, listening more. You know,
what, in terms of leadership,
I listen
then,
to
what
a
is,
lot of
what have you learned
Simon
about leadership throughout your role then?
The kind of his kind of motivational speeches, and he's kind of he gave a good one a few years ago about, you know, CEOs that kind of stand in front of the room and say,
yeah,
you must follow me, this is what you must do, this is how we're going to do it, you know, and you've instantly lost the kind of room where, you know, I think if you can be the last one to kind of speak and take on the relevant information, because ultimately the DOC role to me is knowing and understanding what the certain individuals need to develop and improve. So, but if you're constantly standing in front of the meeting and going, well, this is how we've got to do it, X, Y, Z, then how are you going to ever know that, you know, what an individual coach needs to develop on? So I spend a lot of time watching and listening. And I think initially that the kind of one thing I've been working really hard with my coaches is, you know, the session could look absolutely fantastic. But if the coaching points or the coaching details not part of that session, then you're kind of missing the element of coaching individuals. So I would much rather prefer the kind of session to be a little bit messy, a little bit, you know, I wouldn't say disorganized, but, you know, not really your kind of normal session. But if the coaching detail and the coaching points are really good, I would much rather prefer that. If you could obviously have the mixture of both, that'd be great. So what I keep saying to my coaches is, it's like baking a cake. You know, the end product will be the cake itself on the, you know, on the kitchen counter. But really, it's the ingredients inside it that make the cake even better. And what I mean by that is that, you know, you could have a fabulous looking cake on the kind of kitchen side, but if the cake doesn't taste that good, that, you know, that's not going to be good for the players. So again, it's always for me listening and seeing actually what the coaching points are. And one of the things, again, that works hard with the coaches is that sometimes one coaching point will be enough throughout the session. Sometimes too much is damaging. So in terms of some coaches may have 3 or 4 coaching points. But if you have an hour, 90 minutes session with these kids, realistically, depending on their age and their ability, you know, how much of that coaching points are you actually going to give enough detail for the kids to understand? You know, you might only have one coaching point and you may spend a 90 minutes on that coaching point, but that may be the 90 minutes that the kids need to really understand that coaching point. So again, it's about them principles of, you know, what are you trying to achieve out of the session?
Definitely. And I think, you know, just touching on that as well, it's important that coaches who might be listening to this thinking, right, what does it mean? How can you focus on one coaching point? And I think the key thing to take away from it is in the planning of your session is that you can give everything a fixed time. You might want to spend 20 minutes in it, but you might need 30. You might want to spend 30 minutes in it, but you might only end up needing 10. Depending on how the players are getting along with it. And I think ultimately, if you strip that back and go back to the process in the build up to that, is you really need to know where your players are at along their journey. And the more you know about your players, the better it can be for you in terms of identifying what type of practices and how much time they really could or should need.
Absolutely. And I think what's also important is don't be scared to, if you take your session from session A to B, and they don't quite get session B, then go back to session A. You know, don't lose the concept. Because planning is great, but also be mindful of being be adaptable. So again, what I mean by that is if you go from session A and you're playing out from the back and you're working on the number six dropping in to receive the ball, that's great. And they nail that in kind of session A. But then you go to session B and it's a little bit more it's a little bit more challenging, or you set different kind of restrictions on the game, and then they don't quite get that, and you feel like, well, you know, don't think you have to stay there. You can come back to session A just to revisit them points, just to really hammer home that this is what you're looking to get out of the session. Coaches think that they've got to go from session A to session B to session C and end up with a game or whatever it may be, but that number six may not get the picture. So they're walking away from that session only getting half of the concept of what you originally planned. So again, you have to understand what you're trying to achieve. You know, what is the purpose of your coaching session, and then have you achieved it? Have you achieved this? You know, in that session. And don't be scared to go back to that session A just to revisit a point. And you may stay in that session A for the whole 90 minutes, and that's fine. That's totally fine. If the kids obviously are getting something from it, and you're achieving more at session A than you going from session A up to session D, wherever it may be.
Definitely. And I think, you know, just again, the key thing for me is the session plan is just a guide and not a fixed, it shouldn't be a fixed structure in terms of what you're delivering. I think certainly, you know, as you put it, if it's not quite working, don't be afraid to change it. I think a lot of coaches, many coaches in my time, I've seen them go down and they're hoping that things are going to change. But as soon as you recognise it, right, that's your opportunity to step in.
Absolutely, right, absolutely. And obviously, we'll talk a bit more about the kind of the coaching philosophy styles. But yeah, and maybe you get to session B and it's the right time to go to session B, and you may have to add something else into it. You know, again, you haven't planned for that. So again, just be open-minded and adaptable that you may have to add stuff to certain session planning along the way. And again, that's fine. I think as a coach, if you're adaptable to that, open-minded, that's great.
Definitely. So, you know, just back to yourself now and your journey. And I was just curious to know whether, you know, obviously after many years now, you know, I'm sure you have got some that you can name. Interested to know whether you've got any mentors or any experiences in particular that you felt that you learned major lessons.
Yeah, as I said, I mentioned a few names earlier, but there's a few that definitely come to mind. So I was very fortunate to be coached by Neil Branfield when I played for Arsenal as a kid. Neil was part of the Wenger staff. I was there at Arsenal from under 15, 16s. And then Neil became under Arsene Wenger, part of the first team coaching staff. So I was very lucky to be coached by Neil. Neil was a very command coach. So this was the kind of standard. He definitely let you know about it. And again, that was great. And as a coach, he was very much like that. And that was great to kind of be exposed to that. Then you got the other end of the spectrum with Jan van Loon, who was very open minded, you know, let the game be the teacher. Quizzed the kids about their knowledge and how they could problem solve and figure out situations. Adam Birchall, as I mentioned before, is currently the Arsenal under-14s head coach. Fantastic in terms of understanding individuals and what they needed to improve. Greg Lincoln, I think he's under-18s Arsenal now. He's first of all, great soccer player. I think he played for Arsenal and went on to play for Northampton. Was very good at understanding the tactical of the game. So again, I think there's four names that definitely come to mind, you know, kind of top of my list, that different coaches, different coaching styles, but something that, as I look back, I took a lot from in terms of how to shape my personality. And for anyone that's listening to this, and I think this is really important, is I'm not looking to be like a Neil Branfield or a Jan van Loon or Adam.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Or Greg, whoever it may be, these are just coaching styles that I can take and learn from to develop my own style. I think a lot of coaches watch these kind of programs with Jose Mourinho, Pep Guardiola, and they're fantastic coaches, not denying that. And, you know, we can learn a great deal from them. But ultimately, we want to create our own personality and our own coaching style. So again, I certainly with the coaches that I'm kind of leading now, is I don't want them to be the kind of next Dean Hardings. I'm not asking for that. I want them to be able to, you know, kind of develop their own style and their own personality and not mimic someone else. Because I think that's very important, because that will shape how you will be as an individual and as a coach moving forward.
Definitely. And I think, you know, the underlying thing within that is, if you're trying to be like someone else, you're always going to be playing catch up, because you're not, because they get to that point before you are. So I guess you're always, rather than learning about your own journey, your own environment, you're too busy focused on their one. And the longer you go down that path, you know, the further away you get.
Absolutely. Where you need to be, yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. So definitely developing your own style. And I think one thing I've always kind of did from when I started coaching in 2000 is, whenever you're watching a coaching session, and obviously I watched, as I mentioned, Thierry Henry and Ben Bartlett, who's fantastic at Fulham now, great coaches, is always kind of challenge yourself. So watch a session, kind of taking the knowledge and taking the learning, but also kind of flip on its head and say, well, what would I do here differently? How would I change that? How would I change that to be a better session? And not I mean better session, but a more challenging session. Or even vice versa, make it more lower session, depending on what kind of kids that you coach at that time. And then really kind of test yourself there and then while you're watching. Say, well, I would change this, I would change that. Because naturally now you're kind of developing your own style around the session that you're watching. Listen to the coaching points. I mean, the other great coach, God rest his soul, is Dick Bate. And Dick was one of my mentors in my A license.
Yeah.
Dick was always about the three coaching points. Well, it weren't three coaching points. It was kind of three sayings within a coaching point. So if he was working with a centre-back getting on the half turn, he would always say, you've got to watch what's in front, scan what's behind, and be ready to go. I mean, there was three coaching points there. So within one kind of main coaching point in terms of being on the half turn. So again, that's valuable because within that one kind of the centre-back getting on a half turn, there's three valuable kind of technical aspects that he's looking for. And that hits home with the kids, because as soon as you kind of say three things, they remember them three things. And again, that's, if you can take knowledge from them kind of coaching what you're watching, it's great.
Definitely. And I think, you know, it's one of the key things that we should talk about, you know, different, I guess, mentors in your way of having different strengths. And I think the key thing for me, you know, anyone looking for a potential mentor or looking to kind of maybe really learn from someone in particular, don't always look for the people that are doing the things that you would like to be doing, but also look at the people that are doing the things that you don't want to be doing. I think quite often we get, you know, sidetracked into this way of thinking that we need to always look out for those that have almost been successful at what we would like to be successful, if that makes sense. And not really learn from those that have made mistakes.
Absolutely. And I think
if that makes sense.
Off the field as well, I think this is one of my strong points, is my personality. So sometimes you may have to talk to a kid on the side, or when they're walking to the car, you know, just spend that 30 seconds with them. Because that 30 seconds of non-soccer related time may give you some value information about home life, school life, you know, how their friends are, how they are as individual. So again, you can really assess, does this kid need some TLC, or does this kid, can they be exposed to a little bit more of command coaching? Because ultimately you're trying to make the kids better, and if you can understand them better, then that's going to help you with your session planning and how you develop that individual within a team.
So kind of just kind of build on, obviously, yourself, you know, what you've mentioned there about yourself and some of the things you touched on earlier. You know, talking about coaching philosophies earlier, and you know, it would be interesting to know maybe what your own coaching philosophy is and what the fundamentals are for that.
Yes, I think from a young age, the kids up to under, you know, from babies up to, I mean, I see some kids playing soccer at four now, you know, up to kind of under eights. I think it's all, and I think about my little one who's a first grader, and that'd be nothing to you, but she's six. I think it's just touches on the ball. It really is. You know, I think it's just getting them used to playing the sport, loving the sport from a social aspect, you know, let them play with their friends and just getting that many touches in as possible. I'm sitting in my living room and I can see a soccer ball on the floor, you know, because the girls, I've got two daughters, one's six, one's 10, you know, just, they go around and they kind of halfway through, you know, on the way to the kitchen, they kind of dribble a ball around the kitchen, you know, get them to love the game, especially from that kind of foundation phase, like ball each, no scores, a little bit of understanding around where to be, when to be on the field, get them to understand a little bit of directional in terms of this is what you're protecting, this is what you're trying to go towards the goal, you know, but ultimately just tons and tons of touching the ball. And then I would say from like under 11s, comes a bit more in terms of, you know, your tactical element in terms of, it's in here in America, they go from 4v4, 7v7 to 9v9. Obviously, the field size is really changing them in them dynamics. But obviously, with the ball mastery you've learnt from foundation phase, then developing them now, okay, we have the ball, what does that look like? And I think that one thing that I see kids struggle a lot is the kind of transitions in terms of having possession, you know, about to lose possession and then lost possession and then about to win the ball and then winning the ball. It's the about to, the one in the middle that the kids here struggle with. So again, it's exposing them to them kind of transitions and how your session design caters for that. And then you're looking at from under 15s, a mixture really of really high level ball mastery skills. Hopefully from under 11 to 15s, they've learned good knowledge around tactically where to be on the field. They've learned about transitions. And then really just kind of fine tune them. from under, from the babies up to 15s. There's no real sense of where they're going to play in terms of positional. So they should be have a lot of exposure to different positions. But from under 15s, for me, you're really starting to kind of, I wouldn't say pigeonhole in terms of one position, but there's certainly like a top three positions where you're going to say, well, this player's going to look like this, and this is where they're going to be. So again, now it's really starting to fine-tune that kind of positional sense and that detail. So that is what my own kind of coaching philosophy looks like. And ultimately, if you can have problem-solving right the way through from foundation all the way up to whenever that may be, 19s, is absolutely crucial, because ultimately, yes, you want to give them guidance during the game, during the training session. But if kids can problem solve on their own in terms of understanding they're under pressure and need to release the ball, or they're in open space, or they're in an underload, overload, how they can solve these kind of problems in the game, I think is absolutely crucial. You know, if you have got a coach on the side that's kind of joysticking and solving the problems for them, then for me, they're very limited in terms of their knowledge. But if they can grow that from a young age to under 19s, then I certainly think you're going to create a player.
Definitely. And I think, you know, the key thing, obviously, to touch on there is that individual element and understanding that everyone has their own individual needs within that. You know, and just like kind of just building on that, you know, not only do players have their own individual needs, we've got them as coaches as well. You know, you've obviously been coaching for the last 20 years now. What's helped keep you motivated and inspired throughout that journey? And how do you keep yourself going? You know, you touch there and you've got two kids there, and I'm sure they're a massive inspiration to you. But beyond, I guess, family, unless you identify that as being the sole purpose of your inspiration, what are the kind of things that inspire you?
Yeah, great question. I think it always comes back to the why you coach. And certainly a couple of things that the why of why I coach is I see myself as a failed product of the kind of England system, and that's no fault of anyone else but myself. As I said, I played for Arsenal as a kid, up to 16s, got released, ended up at Southend United, signed kind of a YTS, first year pro. Mm-hmm. My passion was there to play the football, almost said soccer then. But my kind of mentality, probably, you know, there's a lot of distractions, which is a different story. I think that's whenever I see a good player, or I see a lot of good players, but I see one individual that really is a standout player for me, like a maverick player, I always think to myself, I've got a lot of knowledge to give here, because I'm a failed kind of individual in the system. So that really is very inspiring to me, and how I can help that individual get to that kind of that top level that I probably should have made but didn't. So that's definitely one. The other inspiration, as I mentioned, I've got two young daughters. The women's game in America is huge. And I am all for the women's game. I think it's fantastic. I watch a lot of the kind of England women's Super League as well. I think the game's really growing, and that inspires me. It inspires me for my own daughters, but also I think that the women's game in this country is great. Could it be better? Absolutely, and that inspires me to ensure that I am the best that I can be to make the kind of next USA, the next Carly Lloyd or the next Alex Morgan. You know, so again, there's a couple of points there that inspires me, but that's definitely, I would say, the main two.
Again, touching on the fact, you know, you've been coaching for a number of years, and obviously you touched there on, you know, almost being a product of a poor system in some ways, you know, if you want to put it that way. So you've come across many coaches, many sessions, and I'm sure now, you know, operating in different countries as well. what would you say is some of the biggest pet hates or bugbears when it comes to coaching for you? I think, you know, those things that you almost look at and think, oh, you know, almost, you almost want to step in straight away and say something, or you almost think you cringe from something in some aspect.
I think, again, it's a great question. I think I'll come back to my original point in terms of what are the coaching points. I've seen some great sessions, but in terms of it looks great to the eye, but then when you actually listen, there's not a lot of coaching points going in. It's a lot of what I call reactive coaching. So you're kind of coaching in the moment in terms of joysticking and what's going on, rather than maybe looking away from the ball and looking at what else is going on the field and how you can affect that. I think that's definitely, you know, the kind of one of my bugbearers. I always try and make sure that there's 6 points to my kind of my session design, and that's kind of it, making sure it's organized in terms of I know what I'm doing, I know, and the kids know what they're doing. You know, is the kind of session game realistic? Next point would be, is there repetition? Is there enough opportunity for the kids to have a go at something? So if it is a defending topic, 1v1, is all the kids within your session having a chance at doing that 1v1 defending? You know, just don't kind of leave one team to attack and the other team to defend constantly. Is the session challenging enough in terms of, are the kids getting challenged? Not so they're drowning, but they're just about swimming above that line. I think that's always a good kind of a good barrier to put the kids in. The kind of, you know, that kind of that sweet spot. Because if it's too easy, they're not going to get nothing from it. If it's too hard, they may switch off or may give up. So just keeping it right in that sweet spot. Is the kids getting enough opportunity to play in different positions? Are they, as I say, are they getting enough opportunity to try the skill? And then, as I touched on before, problem solving. So again, there's a couple of points there around the kind of bugbear that would get, you know, kind of I see and go, or change that. I think the last point is for me, and I'm seeing a lot of this in social media, and it's a real shame, is ladders and parachutes with some of these younger kids. Yes, there's a place for ladders. Yes, there's a place for hurdles and parachutes and all this. I agree with it. But I don't think you can call yourself a football one-on-one professional when you spend 80% of the time, you know, with the kids doing ladders or parachutes or hurdles, you know. So if you're going to be a football stroke soccer coach, then obviously if you can incorporate a ball as much as possible, I think that's always a plus. And I'm seeing a lot more of that because obviously the time we live in now with the pandemic, that all of a sudden there's been an uprise of these kind of one-on-one coaches, which is great, and I'm all for it. But certainly this makes sure that we're coaching these kids to master the ball, manage the ball, problem-solving the sessions, not just, you know, if you're putting on a two-minute session, that a minute and a half is ladders and the end 30 seconds is a little bit with the ball. So I think there's definitely a couple of things there that that annoy me slightly.
Definitely. I totally get what you mean. And, you know, when it comes to those one-to-one coaches, and, you know, like, there is a massive influx of those coming through now in particular, especially off the back of the pandemic and whatnot. You know, and I think a lot of parents that might be listening to this or have access to those sorts of modes really need to question and maybe do a bit more due diligence as best as possible to kind of identify whether those coaches are right for their, you know, their young sons and daughters, or even older sons and daughters if they've got them. Just to kind of build on from that, then, you know, that's one of the challenges that a parent might face in identifying a suitable coach for their young player. What would be, for you now, looking back at your coaching, what would you say is one of the bigger challenges that you've faced, and how, you know, have you gone about dealing with that? And it, you know, it could be something you're still currently dealing with and maybe not too sure how to get back.
Yeah, I think it's, over my time thinking about it, is dealing with egos, and I definitely won't mention any names, but and breaking down them egos. When I got to the States, and it's, again, I won't go into too much detail, but it's culturally very, very different here. It's more of a business aspect, you know, because a child here, to sign a child, it is very expensive to play soccer. And that's a different conversation. So each club in the area is on its own separate island. And some of the coaches from other clubs just ignored me, totally ignored me, didn't even look at me. Obviously knew who I was, obviously, and knew what my kind of coaching experience would be, but they kind of ignored me. Now, they may have ignored me for many reasons. One, because of my work for Arsenal, West Ham, I'm not sure, but I think that's definitely one thing that the biggest challenge I have is breaking down egos, and especially when, you know, whenever you come here, and some of the coaches that I worked alongside, that were very like, oh, you know, I'm not too sure about Dean. What's he here for? What's his intention? So I think that's one of the biggest challenges is breaking down them barriers, breaking down them egos, and how you go about that, you know, really investing time into individuals. I've managed now to speak to some of the clubs, but it's been hard work, because ultimately, you know, collectively, take away the business aspect and how much these clubs earn, and you know, it is quite a big money. You ultimately, your purpose, all the clubs in this area should be, is to produce that next player, you know, male or female, for the US national squad. And if we can help each other to do that, that's great. You know, and that this player may not even be in my club, but if I can work alongside or speak to this coach once a month and have a few coffees with them and suggest stuff, and I can help that coach, help that player, but then great. I don't need any thanks for that. I'm just happy to pass them some knowledge and help that coach or that individual get to that point, you know. So again, I think that's been, over my how many years I've been coaching for now, that's been my kind of biggest challenge. My current biggest challenge is, I would say, is probably the parent education. Getting away from this kind of results over development and switching it, because parents do play a premium here to play soccer, and they think that by winning every game is their kids developing, and that's not necessarily the case. So again, we've really tried to work alongside the parents, and you're not going to keep every parent happy. You are going to hit some resistance on that. But again, as long as your purpose and your thought process is coming from a very good place, and it's what you believe in, then ultimately I think you're in a pretty strong position. So I definitely, there's definitely two things that I've faced that have been challenging previously and more currently.
Definitely. I can just lead on that last there with the parents. I think it's important for them to understand that the results are not the end, you know, they're really the be all and end all at the end of the day. Youth and athlete talent development in itself is much more about the individual. So, yeah, you could win all the games that you want, you know, I'm sure there's many situations out there where you've had a young team that have absolutely dominated, but when it comes to the end game and actually how many of those end up becoming professional footballers, sometimes it's not always the case. And I'm talking about academies, even within the academies, you know, and then you've got other sides who have maybe not been as successful as I guess groups in that respect, but end up pushing through a lot of individuals.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, the result, of course people want to win. I want to win every game. I mean, I'm not saying that results is not important. It's very important, and that builds a character in an individual. But if definitely. I was to say to someone, well, I won the game 2-1 today, what does that tell you? It says that I won the game, but it doesn't tell me that my team counter-attacked 2 times, score, but the other team had 90% of the possession and they hit the crossbar 6 times. You know, so again, it's that fine balance, right? You know, we want to win the game, and our kind of false thought is to win the game, because you need to be competitive. But ultimately, it's development comes first. It needs to. So, again, that's been a real challenge for me and in my current kind of role.
You know, just moving forward now, and obviously coming back to yourself now, your career, your journey, you know, hopefully you've got many more years left in you, but you know, if I could take you back to the start of your coaching journey, knowing what you know now,
I think it's looking back is probably my way is not always the correct way, if I'm honest. Seeing the bigger picture, I try and invest in myself now. So in terms of if you coach for 8 hours a week, try and invest 25% of that time in self-learning. So if it's 8 hours, you're investing 2 hours a week. And I know, so 2 hours sounds a lot, but if you was to break that down daily, you know, 20 minutes, half hour a day, just really, and again, self-evaluating in terms of what do you need to improve on. And that may not even be as a soccer kind of topic. That may be, you know, a degree or some kind of other learning in psychology, you know, in anything physical, you know, sports science, could be anything really. So I think that's definitely that. If I was to turn back time, I would definitely tell myself. I think also just being comfortable with making mistakes. I think I always try to put on that perfect session, as I keep pointing out in this conversation, is, you know, learning by mistakes, happy to make mistakes, you know, being accountable for the mistakes, and really spending more time and self-reflecting. I think that's definitely a couple of points there that I would definitely tell myself if I was to go back.
You know, and kind of bring it back to where we are now, then, you know, back in 2020, director of coaching at Wizards FC, and it's still relatively new to the role and whatnot. But where do you see yourself going next with your career coaching journey? What are your, you know, any ambitions for the future?
I think I'm really happy. As I said, I was lucky and very fortunate to have a potential opportunity to be number two a women's professional club in New York. I'm really happy with my role at the moment. As I say, it's been a challenging 2.5 years, but I'm really starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel now in terms of where the club is at, where it's moving to. The club have just secured a new venue, so we're going to have a brand new complex in the next year. We are hoping to push to this new Major League Soccer League within the kind of the new youth MLS league they're setting up. You know, I think we're a long way from that, but I think we're definitely making steps towards that. So my honest answer is I haven't got an answer yet. I'm definitely working along. I've had interest from US Soccer regarding doing some coaching education. That really, you know, that really entertains me. I think that'd be great. But at the moment, the honest answer is I'm happy in my new role, my current role. And as I say, it's a project. It's a long-term project. And hopefully, you know, can in the next 5 to 7 years really see the benefits of what we're trying to work on now.
Yeah, no, then, you know, just curious, when you do find it, what would you want your legacy to be?
I just want to be that all-round kind of individual that helped someone be the best they would be. You know, and I don't mean that on the field. I mean, off the field as well. You know, I'm kind of very family-based individual. I'm always harping onto the kids about making sure they're a family. So, and I want nothing more than, you know, some of these kids to be playing professional one day or playing for the national team, and just, you know, buy me a ticket for the stand and I'll be more than happy to sit there and watch it. So I think it's just really just that all-round individual that helped someone to be the best they can be on and off the field. I think that would be, if that's one legacy, I would think I would like to leave it with that.
If you had 60 seconds now to kind of wrap up one golden nugget for our listeners, what would that be? Take away and apply in their own journeys, what would that be for you?
Yeah, so for me, it's investing in your learning. Spend 25% of your coaching, whatever coaching time you do, spend 25% of that learning. Make your session your own. Don't mimic anyone else. Try and watch the session and try and how you would change that into your own in terms of making it more challenging or less challenging. And then also be accountable. Be accountable for everything you do in terms of your actions, in terms of how you behave, how you act, and how you coach these kids. I think there's three points there. Definitely golden nuggets.
Brilliant. Just on a final one then, Dean, you know, if anyone wanted to get in touch with you off the back of this.
So I'm on Facebook, Dean Harding. I'm on Instagram. Just double check that now. I'm also on Twitter, which is Dean Hard at Dean Harding 82, and I believe that's the same for Instagram as well. So yeah, if anyone wants to reach out, I'm very approachable. Please, by all means, reach out to me, and I will definitely get back to you.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another edition of the Coaches Network Insight Series, where we sit down with experienced individuals across the multiple disciplines within the coaching world, hoping to explore their journeys and key insights in order to package away some golden nuggets that you can apply to help you reach your full potential. I've no doubt that you've enjoyed today's episode as much as we have, but I just want to say thanks again for tuning in. The support is much appreciated. Please do get in touch with us and today's guests. Let us know where you're listening from to share your thoughts, views, and key takeaways from today's show, along with any suggestions you may have for guests or future topics on the show that you'd like to hear discussed. Ultimately, guys, the show is about yourselves. The content is for you, and we just want to continue to create that great content. On that note, get in touch with us on Instagram at The Coaches Network and on Twitter at The Coaches Net. And if you want to touch base with Coach Ben, he's available on Instagram and Twitter at FocusBXN. Lastly, guys, keep an eye out on our socials for the latest updates and announcements for upcoming guests and discussion topics with the panel. And until next time, guys, take care.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.